Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Hello and welcome to Review Time's Theme Park Cast. This is a weekly show where we discuss all the ins and outs of attractions and parks from around the world. My name is Luke and I will be your skipper today as we visit the actual spots where back in 1974, that mean old shark Jaws devoured all those poor, innocent islanders. Of course, if we want to attract sharks on our little boat tour, we're going to need some chum. So please welcome my best chum, Review Time co-host Dominic Lacey.
I don't know if that's really on my repertoire that I want to have, you know, theme park reviewer, podcast host, chum.
It's a play on words. Chum is both what you attract sharks with, but chum is also the word for friend.
Well, I'm hoping that I'm attracting the sharks with my shockingly good looks and not because
of
I'm
course,
a tasty treat.
Oh, who knows? Well, let's find out. Because today we are talking about Jaws the Ride, iconic Universal Studios attraction. Now, I know our history is pretty much the same as each other's. Have you ridden Jaws?
I have ridden Jaws. Or I've ridden the Japanese version of Jaws.
Yes.
Sorry.
Which is the same as me. It's the same. So we'll discuss it throughout. But the ride was originally in Orlando, and then it was an opening day attraction in Japan, where it still survives to this day. It's the only version of the ride both of us have experienced, but it's still, even though it's not in English, an awesome ride and one of my favorite Universal Studios attractions in the world.
And I think it's a one-for-one copy of the Orlando attraction, isn't it?
Yep, it's pretty much the exact same ride, just in Japanese instead of English.
Mm. So if you know the general script, being big theme park,
it's pretty straightforward of big scary shark tries to attack. That's all you need to know.
I didn't and pick the fact that up. That it's in,
oh, there's a shark in this ride? I thought it was just a leisurely boat ride.
I thought it was an angry dolphin.
But it is such an iconic ride for Universal, as you'll learn throughout the course of this episode. Opening day attraction for Universal Orlando, and it's iconic. It's an amazing ride. Unfortunately, it no longer exists in Orlando, and we'll break that down a little bit later. But we need to start somewhere, and the perfect place to start is with the film Jaws. So Jaws was released in 1975, and it becomes the first summer blockbuster of all time. The whole idea today that films are released in summer is thanks to Jaws. This film made $470 million at the box office back in 1975.
That's like a squillion dollars.
Yeah. Adjusted for inflation, that's a 10 squillion nowadays. So
I'll find out for you.
But yeah, so that's huge. And, you know, Steven Spielberg behind it. It's based off a book that was written in 1974. As soon as the film became so popular, as happens a lot of the time, same with Jurassic Park, where they were like, oh, this is going to be big, so we'll make a ride out of it. They saw how popular the film was, and instantly they were like, can you add this to the backlot tour? And they did this like within months of the film coming out. They essentially went, yo, can you add this as another attraction on the Universal backlot tour? So that opened up a year later in 1976. Now, if you get the chance to look up a picture of the shark that this ride opened with, because it's hilarious. It's nicknamed the carrot tooth shark. And the teeth on this shark look like party hat size teeth, spray painted white.
Oh, no.
So
was this the Hollywood one, right?
Yeah, so yeah. When it opened up in 1976, the backlot, which is the first kind of Jaws attraction that led to the ride at Orlando and stuff like that, it had this, and it's still the one that's there today, the ride, but they've updated the shark a few times over the years.
Made it look more like a shark.
Yeah, because they wanted it to look like the poster. You know that iconic movie poster where the girl's like swimming and the shark's like down below? If you look at that poster, the shark has quite like elongated teeth, But that's a 2D poster. When they took that and turned it into real life, it looked ridiculous. Oh, it didn't look real. It didn't look scary. But that was part of the studio tram tour from, yeah, a year after the film had opened. And we've never really discussed it on the show, but for a quick history of Universal Studios Japan, Universal Studios Florida.
Can I quickly jump in here and just say that adjusted for inflation in 1975, it would be $2.27 billion in 2020 money.
So definitely a summer blockbuster
so
then.
Pretty much they could make Star Wars Galaxy Edge with the profit that they would have made from from this.
Oh, good on them. That's ridiculous. Astronomical amounts of money. Wow. But yeah, so this idea for the Florida park originally was essentially, hey, let's take the studio tram tour. We'll make it a huge part of the park until our good friend, Mr. Michael Eisner, then CEO of Disney, got wind of what Universal was going to do when he used to work previously at Paramount and said, oh, a studio tour in Orlando, hey? What a shame if I were to steal that idea and do it first. And that's what they did. And they opened up Disney MGM Studios and pretty much that entire park,
at least 80% of it. Them.
Yeah. 80% of that park was a studio tram tour. So Universal went, oh no, what do we do here? And one of my favorite things about this is that Universal essentially went, oh yeah, Disney, you want to steal our thing? Well, we're going to steal your thing. We're going to out-Disney Disney. So they essentially went into the Florida Universal Park with the idea of just essentially going, our rides are going to be bigger and better than yours. So, ha ha ha, you got the studio tour, but we're going to win in the end, was the idea at least.
I feel like they almost won with that. Because, you know, Disney's Hollywood Studios in Orlando has had so many problems, whereas the Universal Studios Orlando Resort has just been hit after hit after hit, except for
Islands of Adventure in 2001, Universal Studios Escape. Universal Studios Escape, which we've never talked about, but in its shortest form, Universal Studios Orlando Resort, when it was becoming a resort, for some reason called itself Universal Studios Escape. It was a marketing mess.
That.
Nobody knew what it even meant. It led to kind of big issues for a while, and it was only really Harry Potter that kind of saved them, essentially, from...
No, it was Fast and Furious.
Supercharged. Number one. Disney wanted to outdo Disney, and so... In order to do that, they first tried to approach legendary Disney Imagineer Bob Gurr. And they said to Bob Gurr, hey, Bob, we want to do this ride. So it's going to be a boat ride. There's going to be all these massive animatronic sharks that swim through the water and they lash out at the boat and stuff like that. And Bob Gurr just went, no, that's too hard. Even I don't want a piece of that. Now, this is Bob Gurr, who worked with them on the King Kong animatronic at Hollywood, mastermind of themed entertainment. He's designed the monorail. All of the Disney vehicles are pretty much his. So for him to say no, essentially, it shows you kind of what Universal was tackling at this. And Gurr's decision proved to be a pretty smart idea because... The ride would open up in 1990 with Universal Studios Florida, and it was a mess.
Yeah, because I remember hearing about an original version of Jaws, which I've never really looked into all that much, which was outrageous. Like, it was way too much.
Ambitious, shall we say.
Yeah.
This original version of the ride opened with the park on the 7th of June 1990, and put simply, it didn't work. It cost them $30 million, and there was two scenes that were quite problemsome, shall we say. All the animatronics had issues, but there was two specific scenes. The first
problemsome.
One... Yeah, sorry, that's a word now.
I feel like my job the last couple of weeks has just been calling you out on words. Problematic, I think, is the word you're after. Problemsome sounds like a disease.
Eh. It works. You know what I'm getting at. You know what I'm getting at. So the two problematic scenes, the first one sounds sick. There was a part so the animatronic would come out of the water, bite your boat, and then swing it around.
Whoa.
Like latch onto it and essentially like drag it through the water and throw you away. Issue is the shark didn't actually bite onto your boat. Essentially what was happening was there was two mechanical things that needed to line up at the exact perfect time to make it look like he grabbed your boat and whipped it around. They were doing their own thing, and a lot of the time the timing was off, so he'd end up just like thrashing around in the water with nothing in front of him, or the boat would just, you know, swing off. So when it worked, it would have been awesome, but trying to make one boat swim up to another boat perfectly in sync, latch on with absolute precision hundreds of times a day, it is difficult. Yeah. It didn't work.
I can imagine how that's difficult. It's, you see problems with simpler mechanics in attractions, and even just the difficulties they have with roller coasters where they have switching tracks and things like that. And that's a single point of movement, whereas this is like multiple complex pieces coming together. I don't know. Like, it's probably that thing where they looked at it on paper and went, this will work. And then when they put like it all together, they're like, uh-oh.
Like, just explaining that to you, I could see your face. You were like, wow, that sounds impressive. But there's the issue. It sounds impressive on paper. It doesn't work in theory, unfortunately.
The big factor I would probably say here is that the water is not like air. Water has resistance and water moves around. So if you have a rogue splash that just comes from anywhere and there's a differential sort of pressure between two areas, then that's going to be a variable that you can't necessarily account for, especially when did this open? 1990?
1990.
Like, yeah, so you don't have the technology to calculate the flow of the water around you. So very ambitious.
That was a huge issue they had, was trying to get the sharks to move. Like, it's easy to move outside of water, but when you want something to move at speed and lunge at a boat or something, from a standing start, think of all that resistance that's built in water. How much technology and stuff like that. And that was one of the other issues. But the other big scene that ultimately didn't make it into this final version of the attraction was a shark guts cannon. Now, I'm going to try to explain that. I've got a picture here in the show notes. I'll tweet it on Twitter or something as well. But essentially, it was a cannon. And in the cannon was these like bits of fake shark guts and bloody water, like red dyed water, that the skipper would shoot the grenade launcher into the shark's mouth. And just like at the end of the Jaws film, it would explode. Shark guts, shark blood going everywhere. Everyone would cheer because the shark is dead. The issue is that works in a film because it's easy. You only have to get the shot once. They had to design this overly engineered system that essentially is a giant funnel, and it would air cannon at the bottom would shoot all the blood and guts out. And then it would slowly go up in the air, land in the water, and sink down. And a funnel would, like, catch it all and reset in, like, 30, 60 seconds was the idea. And there's a patent for this. And just looking at it, it's like, okay, it looks like some kind of Archimedes-level contraption.
Yeah.
It's just to shoot fake shark blood.
You can really tell that they were trying to stick it to Disney with these sort of things, because they're probably like, yeah, Disney don't have shark gut cannons.
Yeah, Disney, where's your shark guts cannon?
But I think the other problem here is that, once again, they're not factoring in the variable of water, because water doesn't behave the way you want it to.
No, you expect it to. Hundreds of times a day.
Fine. if it's in the air. Like, if you look at it, it's just a big cannon with a funnel, and then when the bits fall down, they will go back in. But even if
caught,
like, when you shoot things through water, unless you're shooting it outside the top of the water, which would then be a whole mechanism in itself where you would have to have the explosion, have the pipe come up out of the water, then shoot the guts up, then go back down, then collect it, which is more over-engineered than what they've got here, which is already over-engineered.
Yeah.
Like, as you shoot it out of the water, it's, you know, if they're not shaped exactly like a sphere and they've got that resistance on these objects, and if they don't have the right weight or anything like that, it's just going to go all over the place. So I can imagine how they would have had problems. But are there images or videos of these?
Yes, there is a video of both of these effects working. You can find it if you look up Jaws 1990. The biting on the boat effect doesn't look quite as cool in person as it did in my mind, but this part looks pretty cool because it does. It's this huge plume of water, and in the water you can see like chunks and red and stuff like that. And I wonder, because, you know, the guts and stuff that's being exploded out of it, do you reckon a guest has somewhere a souvenir of this? Because, you know, the timing was just off and it's landed in their lap or something like that.
Oh my
Surely
God,
somebody
yeah.
out there has
someone
a piece
would have to have
of Jaws.
Even an ex sort of cast member or one of the...
Yeah, just a cheeky pocket.
The Universal creatives
or the
would
team
have probably...
Member. Yeah, yeah.
Is this still... This was never introduced to Japan, was it?
No. So this version of the attraction was kind of iconic because... Universal Studios Florida opened and their three major rides didn't really work. Their idea of sticking it to Disney kind of came back and bit them on the bum because Confrontation, Earthquake, and Jaws didn't really work. They all suffered from extensive breakdowns and bugs, but Confrontation and Earthquake, the big one, were able to be fixed, but Jaws was not. Unfortunately, and it's a lot of that issue we were talking about before, where it's that they just couldn't figure out how to overcome the enormous drag caused by the water and all of those sort of things. And guest evacuations became daily. So many problems occurred that staff were told to tell guests the ride was in technical rehearsals pretty much permanently. And then it became a joke, like some skippers would ride through and effects wouldn't work. And there was a skipper literally known for being like, okay, guess, imagine explosions over here. Imagine a shark lunging out of the water here. And it got so bad. It got to this stage where, you know, when you walk into a park and it's got attractions not operating today, the little placard, Jaws the Ride was on there permanently, even if they'd hoped to get it open that day. It was permanently on the attractions not operating today, so that essentially they would avoid later disappointment. That's how many issues this ride had. They couldn't get it to a stage where they could say it would be open for the entire day. It essentially broke down every single day, but not all the issues were mechanical. In one day, a guest actually fell into the water and the skipper got him out. And the kids, so it was a dad and the son was screaming, the shark's going to eat my dad. The shark's going to eat my dad. The Universal employees pull the man out of the water and he slips and falls back into the water. Then they get him back out again. He's got a scraped leg and he's bruised. And then the other riders start applauding because they think it's part of the show. he sues Universal. They settle out of court, understandably, because of stuff like that. But this and all the technical issues the ride has, Universal just kind of gives up on it. So by the 22nd of August, 2.5 months after the park opened, Universal just went, okay, this ride isn't working. They closed it down for a major overhaul, announcing that it would not reopen until the following year. But they tried to fix it in 1991 and 1992, but they couldn't. So they literally started from scratch again.
I would love to see this original iteration of the ride. where it was like the water drained from the attraction just to see things like the meat cannon, because I reckon that would have looked incredible.
I've got a picture of the meat cannon. There's a book that I've read about this ride, and there's a picture of the water drained around the big funnel meat cannon.
Oh, can you please put that on the Twitter and send that to me?
Yeah, I will do. So the ride fails and Universal actually sues the creator of the attraction. So Ride and Show Engineering Incorporated they did everything about this ride. Universal blamed them that they didn't properly design it. Ride and Show blamed Universal for not giving them enough time. The matter was settled out of court. We're not too sure which way it went, but they essentially went, all right, we'll keep the ride like theming around the edges and we'll try to use as much as we can again, like the same sets and a few of the same gimmicks. But that was it. The ride system got torn out. The sharks got torn out and they had to spend. So this ride originally cost them $30 million. They had to spend another $40 million to fix it.
Wow.
So this is a now $70 million attraction when it finally reopens.
That's leading up to, you know, the territory of things like Expedition Everest.
Mm-hmm. But like this is in the 90s. That's true. Astronomical money for theme parks in the 90s. $70 million for a single attraction.
Well, I guess considering that they did make $2.2 billion off it only 25 years, 15 years earlier, they might have a little bit of money to spare on the attraction. So.
But they did manage to get this new version of the ride open. So after this short commercial break, we'll discuss the ride that essentially we've ridden and the ride that they finally got consistently able to run. So we'll be right back. All right, and we are back. We're ready to jump aboard the boat tour and explore Amity Island. So, quick few stats before we jump aboard. Amity Harbor, which is the area of the ride, covers an area of roughly 7 acres and holds approximately 5,000 gallons or 19,000 liters of water.
Whoa, that's a big pool.
So, this is a huge ride. If you go to the park today, Diagon Alley, which is what ultimately replaced Jaws, that whole land fits on what was essentially a single ride back in the day.
So it looking here though, where you've got the ride track, 350 meters in length, that doesn't seem like all that big, but when you ride this attraction, it's huge.
Yeah. So the ride track itself is only 350 meters or 1140 feet, but they've managed to stretch that out to be a 5-minute ride. Mm. And throughout that 5 minutes, you see the shark a total of 7 times. So,
yeah,
which is pretty good ratio, I would say. But to talk about how they managed to stretch that only 350 meters into a 5-minute ride, let's talk about the ride itself.
Yeah.
But we always kind of talk a little bit here about the backstory of rides and how they kind of tie it in, because Universal, it seems like at first glance they'd be doing book report rides, but they don't really, because they try to explain them. So in the same way that Jurassic Park was like, hey, this is a new Jurassic Park, this isn't just a rehashing of the film, they kind of did the same thing here. So this ride treats the Jaws film as if it was a documentary sort of thing. So they're treating Jaws and Amity. So the shark named Jaws happened in 1974 in this, and Brody destroyed him, and he became a legend in Amity Harbor. And then this incident that occurred inspired Steven Spielberg's big Hollywood blockbuster. So it's treating, and they introduce you. So this is the idea, you know, welcome. This is the place that the film is based on. You're not writing the film. You're in the place where the film is set. So after that, though, Amity gets a name for itself as being, you don't want to come here because there's sharks. There's big, ugly sharks, and they're going to chomp at you sort of thing. So the tourism industry dies. So there's a resident on the island, Jake Grundy, who decides to open a new boat tour. And the boat tour takes you around the historic areas scene in the film. So essentially, the backstory is he's essentially done, you know, those tours you can do in Hollywood where they're like, and this is where they filmed this movie. And this is where Dr. Phil lives.
Essentially, that's the story, this is where such and such was murdered.
Those are different Hollywood tours, but yes, you can probably get those as well. And essentially, he would take you on a tour of where the historic areas, they, you know, where the shark attacks occurred, where all the characters live, stuff like that.
Oh, that's clever.
And then this, yeah, and it's a good way. I appreciate Universal for doing this, as we talked about in Jurassic Park. They don't just go, hey, you know Jaws, there it is, ride, it's Jaws. This is Jaws, of course it is. It tries to give something more. The ride isn't just there so you can ride through your film. It's actually been thought about.
Though in saying that, even though they've got that backstory there, sometimes it wouldn't necessarily be super obvious to many guests.
Yeah, that's always the issue.
Because I think it's also similar to the Harry Potter attractions where it's like, I kind of get what they're trying to do where it's like, oh, they're having muggles go on a tour of Hogwarts and all of that. But it's not really
how much you have to think about it to get that.
Because I where know most that people there's be a like, story there.
It's just a ride through of Jaws.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And similar to Jurassic Park. It's like, oh, we're just going through Jurassic Park. So,
yeah.
But
that more
I still
kind of niche stuff. Yeah.
I appreciate it
though.
Yeah.
Better than just, hey, here's Peter Pan. You know the film? Here it is in 2 minutes. Enjoy. So let's talk quickly about the weenie to the facade of the ride in that it doesn't really have a big one.
No.
So the original version in Orlando, it just had the Amity boat tours. It didn't say kind of Jaws, like big or anything. It just said Amity boat tours. And you would walk in to Amity boat tours, keeping in story, keeping in universe. In Japan, though, the building just, it's still like this preservation society type of building, but on it is just humongous letters that say Jaws in like all red. That's all it says. Just J-A-W-S. No the ride, no nothing like that.
Just Jaws. Only Jaws.
You know what it is. but of course, probably I would call it the most iconic weenie. And I'm sure pretty much anyone who's been to a Universal park probably has this picture, but there's like a giant shark hanging up and you like can stick your head in it.
Ah, oh, that's, it's so iconic that it's included in video games. It's included in like, I know Dreamworld, an Australian theme park that we have here.
It's like a fake version of it.
Yeah, out the front of Tailspin. So, yeah.
which
has nothing to do
with it at all, but anyway,
no, it just has one.
But I think the amount, probably there's probably more people who've taken that picture than have actually ridden Jaws the Ride.
Yeah,
I would
true.
Almost say. Because that's that shark is still there at Universal Orlando. It's just been moved to a different area.
I so you can still take say, a picture with Jaws. It's just in the middle of Hogsmeade.
It makes sense.
Wizards and a shark.
Enjoy. But so you enter through Captain Jake's Amity boat tours. You go in the queue, it's kind of themed to a boathouse. It's not that interesting. Unfortunately, it has a lot of switchbacks, but it does have a few little bits and pieces to look at on the walls. Up above, there's television monitors that are tuned to Amity's local TV station, which plays kind of these like little camp ads and different stuff like that. It's fun to watch, but it's very reminiscent of the time, shall I say. And I think they still play these in Japan, but they kind of feel a little bit outdated now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you get to the end of the queue and your boat pulls up and the first thing you'll notice is you have a live skipper. So the person steering your boat and essentially the quality of your experience will pretty much depend on this person because it's very team member driven, this ride. And even more so if you look at like for us, maybe not so much because we don't understand Japanese anyway, but you could still get that kind of acting and that kind of experience that the person was putting on and that over the top kind of energy they were bringing, even if you didn't speak the language.
Yeah.
From the version in Japan.
And I have to say from the Japanese version that I've ridden, I think I've only ridden it a couple of times, but every time that I've gone on it, the skippers have always just been incredible. They've been energetic, super into the attraction. I'd probably say it's one of those things where, similar to where a lot of people in the Magic Kingdom want to work on the Jungle Cruise, I'd say a lot of people at Universal Studios Japan would want to work on Jaws. But in saying that, do you think that Jaws is still a prominent sort of movie in Japan?
I'm not sure, because that's seems strange to me, because obviously it became Harry Potter and Universal Orlando. And then when there was rumors of Harry Potter coming to Japan, everyone thought, oh, this is it. Jaws is gone. Mm. And then there was rumors of Nintendo coming to Japan and everyone was like, oh, that's it. Jaws is gone. But it's managed to survive both of those two major additions. So who knows? Maybe it's really popular there.
Yeah, I think it's maybe still, it's probably got to do decent, with like the Americanisms that Japanese sort of people really cling on to, especially when Tokyo Disney opened. Everyone was like, yes, American things. There's sort of a lot of romanticism towards American sort of properties and intellectual sort of properties. So I guess it could be that. I'm making assumptions here, so I'm not an expert in it. Cultures at all, but I think
the fact
could
that it's still surviving, you know, at this stage says something. At
least 100%,
and it has quite lengthy wait still. Like even when the rest of the park. So when I went with you, it was a relatively moderate kind of wait times. But when I went the year later, it was quite low wait times. But Jaws was still like a 40-minute wait, and this ride can take a capacity of 2,500 people an hour.
Whoa.
So it's a people eater. Yeah. So for it to still have 40-minute waits when the park is relatively quiet, I mean, I got on kind of backdrop, you know, Hollywood Dream the Ride backdrop, which is kind of one of the most popular attractions in the park, was only like a 30-minute wait. And Jaws was a 40.
Wow. And I know that backdrop has, like, it takes a lot longer to load being a roller coaster.
It doesn't eat, like, it couldn't have anywhere near 2,500 people an hour. So hopefully it still has a long time to go, because it's probably my favorite ride at Universal Studios Japan. I really like Spider-Man, but I prefer the Orlando version of Spider-Man. I've been lucky enough to ride that as well. I can't really think of anything else that I would call above it.
Flying
what about
Dinosaur. You love Flying Dinosaur. We love Flying Dinosaur.
Oh, especially at 8 a.m. in the morning on an empty tum.
I love waking up, walking to Universal Studios, riding a flying roller coaster, and hating the rest of my day.
It's the true Universal Japan experience.
Flying Dinosaur, for those who don't know, is a flying roller coaster. So you lay flat on your belly, sort of flying through, almost like Superman style, if you imagine, like hands like out. I find them really painful. I've never been a big fan
like
of them.
But even, like, I enjoy Flying Dinosaur. I know you don't. I enjoy it, but I couldn't ride it more than maybe once or twice in a day. It's very intense.
Yeah. Just because...
And especially for a Universal ride, it's definitely the most intense Universal ride.
Mm.
By a fair margin. Like, there isn't really anything else that's like it.
Maybe the Hulk? Or Hulk
It's
is-
more intense than Hulk. Hulk's kind of intense, but
which is at Universal
it's definitely
Studios.
More, maybe the new
Orlando
Velocicoaster, maybe.
Oh, yeah,
might
true.
Give it a run for its money, but who knows? Jumping back over to Jaws. So the first time, as we're saying, it was a single company that built it, and there was a lot of issues. So Universal learned their lesson, and they brought in a ton of different companies to come in and build different parts of it.
Yeah.
So they got Intamin, who came and they built the ride system.
Yeah.
They got Regal Marine Industries, an Orlando-based company, to build the boats that would attach to the ride system.
Mm.
Eastport International would build the sharks, and Nassalco would physically construct the underwater track and surrounding ride buildings. And then another company, iTech Productions, would build essentially the computer software that ran the show. So they got professionals in every separate industry to build the relevant parts and then put it all together, rather than relying on one company to try to do absolutely everything.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's a really clever way of doing it. The only thing that I'm caught out on, is that nasal or nasal? Like, yeah, nasal vessels?
I don't know. Yeah, N-A-S-S-A-L.
Because I know, like, language warning, but N-A-S-S, arse, is that... This is, that's a tangent, sorry. So I was just looking at that.
I'm big, like, explicit E co. For that.
The nasal co. It just doesn't sound right. It's one of those weird English language things.
Especially when it's a company name a lot of the time, I find. It feels like they just do whatever they want.
Like us, review time with a Y.
Make it up. Go with it. But as we were saying before, the ride is run by a skipper who is your host for the attraction. So when the ride was operating, they would do 3 runs of the 6-minute attraction at a time and then take a break. Because it was quite physical, it was quite draining. They did this to try to keep the energy high. So when they got the job, and it was quite sought after, they would receive an 8-page script and a 9-page workbook.
Jeez.
And then an acting coach would ride through the attraction with them, and they wouldn't be allowed to go with guests until the acting coach signed them off. So even though it was an attractions position, it was quite highly regarded. It was more acting, kind of think of something like Great Movie Ride with like a gangster or something like that. A more acting, but still just attractions sort of thing.
Well, I think it almost holds it to more esteem than stuff like the Great Movie Ride, because for a lot of that, you know, there are some spectacular people for the Great Movie Ride, which is similar to this, say a guided attraction where you have someone there doing the entire script and you're going through the world of movies and you're going through different dioramas and that. As you said, there's a gangster who comes out and steals the vehicle, and they shoot at your Red On Air podcast light, which is a nod to Podcast Ride, which is a really good podcast. You should check them out.
Shout out.
But with that, even though their script is just very much, this is a great attraction for me because
ladies
I'm
ladies and gentlemen,
I love the movies where these people really get into it. So
that, just as a quick tangent, that is actually a casted position. So those are the best people who did that on Great Movie Ride. And then from there, you had to get casted from that pool to actually be the gangster or the Wild West guy.
Yeah.
So the people who were playing those were the best of the best. So that says a lot about what the talent pool is. But the talent pool at Universal Orlando must have been great, because all the videos I've seen of this ride and the times we've done it in Japan, they're spectacular. The skippers, and they really sell
energetic.
The story.
They're really into it. They get into the physicality. Like when they're shooting the grenade launchers, they're like, they fully response to that.
Yep. And it's all about timing for them too. So it's not just giving a good show, but making sure the boat's in the right place at the right time to set off the right effects is all part of the ride, and good on them.
And they sell it.
Like, if,
because it is, it's a thriller attraction, and they are the people who make it thrilling, because at the end of the day, when they're going through this attraction, if they're just like, Oh, guys, here comes Jaws.
Oh, no.
Everyone get
it's
ready.
Been attacked.
You're going to be like, well, what? But if they're like, we have to get down quickly, everyone, make sure and make no noise. You're like, oh, okay, this energy's getting to me. Yeah. Like,
and it makes it more scary that they're going so energetic. But so you board, your skipper's there from the beginning. They welcome you aboard. And he says that we're going to visit the locations of the shark attacks that occurred during that fateful summer in 1974, which were made famous in a big Hollywood movie. So one of Captain Jake's skippers guides you along, and as you were saying before, he has a 40-millimeter grenade launcher.
Very nice.
The skipper says, don't worry, guys, we won't need to use it. The last time anyone saw a great shark around here, a great white shark, was back in 1974. And that's some weird stuff, because it's hard to tell if the ride was exactly set in modern times, because they had that line where it's like, oh, we haven't seen a shark here in over 30 years. And then some other parts of it are like, oh, but the gas price is 80 cents a gallon, even though it's actually $4 a gallon now. So, like, no one can really quite agree when this ride was set.
The answer is yes.
Yes. It's set at Universal Studios Orlando, where time is timeless. But your tour begins, you go through Amity Harbor, it starts off quite slow, you go through the homes of Chief Brody, the mayor, various other harborside businesses, but you start to round a corner and your boat gets a distress call, and would you believe it, something goes wrong at a Universal
theme park attraction.
I know.
Something going wrong in the story? What?
What? This was meant to be a nice leisurely tour, but no. You get a call, and one of the fellow boat skippers named Gordon is calling out for help. And he's screaming, he's saying, help, help, essentially, something's got it, something. And then there's silence. Which is quite eerie for a theme park attraction. And the skipper's calling out, he's like, what the heck is going on, essentially? As you round the corner, and you see Gordon's boat, Amity 3, sinking. It's got a massive chomp mark taken out of it. Jeez. And the boat is sinking into the water. So essentially all they're saying is, hey guys, remember that crew in that remember the group of guests in front of us? Whoopsies, they're gone now.
They're dead now.
So, sorry about that. Hope that doesn't happen to
us. They're all sleeping.
Which is a cool effect. It's a full-size ride vehicle kind of sinking into the water. And then you get your first glimpse of the shark. A dorsal fin rises out of the water.
Not a dorsal fin.
No, the scariest part. And the classic music starts to play. He goes under and he goes underneath the boat. And the boat actually like kind of rocks a bit, which is cool. And then the skipper pulls out the grenade launcher, fires it at the thing. It's got some big water explosions, which are cool. The shark fin dips beneath the surface of the water again, and your skipper goes, all right, we got to get out of here. Mm. And you go into what, in my opinion, is still terrifying.
Yeah.
The part where you go into the boathouse, and it's like, so you're going, essentially your skipper's like, all right, let's hide out in that boathouse. The shark can't get us in there. You go inside, and the doors close, and it's almost pitch black.
Yeah, your skipper gets...
Yeah, he gets like a torch, and that's the only light in the room, and he's like shining it at stuff. There's like harpoons. Then he shines it over, and there's like shark that's been like cut up and kind of to be eaten or something. And then all like everything starts going, you know, creaking, and all these boats are falling down. And then all of a sudden, you realize that everything... all this shaking and stuff is because the shark is banging on the outside of the building. That's the idea, at least. Yeah. And then he breaks in, essentially. The shark breaks a hole in the building and just like, this is the first time you see the full, you know, jumping out of the water and jumps at the guests. They go past them. Your skipper is powering the boat. But I remember that
this is still
part,
in the dark as well.
This, yeah. The light that you get, there's only two kinds of light. The first one is the skipper's light, where he's shining it around. And the second is when the shark bursts a hole in the wall and you can start to see the light from outside. Like, this part is terrifying still.
Yeah, jeez. I do remember this part, and it was just... absolutely, like, because you've just got that one directed light, you can't get a sense of what's really happening around you. And then when the shark bursts in and they move it over, it's almost like a jump scare because you, like, he's looked over there before, there's been nothing there, he moves it back, and the shark is just lunging at you.
Yeah,
it's, and it's terrifying.
Got this huge noise, it's like every time, it's like the air pressure every time it comes out of the water. And it scares me every, like, it's that kind of, like the Carnotaurus at the end of Dinosaur. Even when you know it's coming, it's, you still flinch because it's, like, so loud and so aggressive. But luckily, your skipper, he floors it and you manage to get out. and you've survived the boathouse part, but you're not home free. The shark's still alive and he's got a taste for guests because that other boat was done and he must have eaten all the guests because and now he wants more. Yeah. Big hungry boy. But you get out and the skipper is freaking out, and it's, as we're saying, this acting of this, the skipper is really bringing it to life. Mm. So he's looking for somewhere to tie up the boat. He's looking for somewhere to essentially get guests off.
Yeah.
The boat, which makes sense.
Yeah.
So you leave the boathouse. The skipper is informed by the chief that the chief is going to be there in 10 minutes. And then he says the classic line, 10 minutes, we'll be shark bait in 10 minutes, which has become like the iconic quote of the attraction. It's like used in nowadays, like articles will use it as like the headline or this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's become iconic, but the delivery of the line I've seen in all of the videos and stuff, you have to watch it. I don't do it justice, but
like, it's so over the top. I think it is just one of those things. We have to remember that, like, even though a lot of people watch films, a lot of people ride theme park attractions.
Okay, so you know that you're going to be shark bait in 10 minutes.
I'm going to be shark bait in 10 minutes, Luke.
Yeah, Chief Brody, he can't help you in 10 minutes. So the skipper, though, he can help you. He arms himself with the grenade launcher just as the shark again pops out of the water and attacks the boat near a gas dock. Because it's a ride, and logically in the middle of water, we have the gas dock.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the grenade fired by the skipper hits the gas dock, which erupts into flames and is an incredibly face-burning effect.
I remember this part is just like, there's a couple of explosions. You're just like, oh, I'm crispy now.
Yeah, if it was a nice cold day. There's an interview with one of the designers of the show, and he literally got like a little boat, like a little tinny boat, and he anchored himself where the ride was going to be at this point. And another guy was up in the control booth with the flames. And he would essentially just sit there and go, all right, a little bit more. All right, a little bit more. And got to the point where he couldn't take it anymore. And then he was like, all right, dial it down 10% below that. And that's the final amount that they had. So it's almost enough to burn you, but not quite. Though, in the Floridian sun, after you've had a few days and you've gone a little bit pink from sunburn,
yeah,
it feels like it's a lot hotter than it like actually is. Just
come out with this big fire hand and just slapped you in the face.
And this part's really cool because so it erupts with fire, and then the fire starts to like surround your boat.
Mm.
And the only way out is for you to essentially go through the fire.
Floor it. So yeah.
Yeah, you floor it through the fire, you get around, and you can see there's an old fishing pier. And the skipper goes, that's it. That's where we're gonna get off. We're going to escape. This is it. We're going to be safe. But you're slowly going towards it, and would you guess it, the shark's back. And he's still hungry. So he starts heading straight towards the tour boat, and he's about to hit it, but, and there's a big but, he jumps out of the water. He comes to attack the boat, but there's a power cable in the water for some reason. And he chomps, and he electrocutes himself. What
silly
a shame.
Shark. Who knew that the greatest force that could only stop this shark was people? People are the monster here. Well, actually, in saying that, wasn't it Jaws actually sort of develop that fear of shark? Because shark attacks are really random.
Super duper rare. But Jaws made it seem like, oh, you go to the beach, you're going to get eaten by a shark.
And so people were just like culling sharks worldwide. And they actually attribute it. And they're like, the amount of sharks that Jaws the movie has killed is just immeasurable. Like, it is because astronomical.
Probably Jaws a ride, too, as an extension of that.
True.
But, so this ending where he chomps on the electrical cable. So, the original ride ending was based off the film where they exploded the shark. This is actually ending based off Jaws 2. Ah. This is what happens in the second film. So he chomps, and then this smell of like burnt shark emanates through the air. I don't know how to explain it, but you can smell it, and it's like kind of smoky meat smell.
Yeah.
And then there's like all this steam and stuff around, and then another shark comes up and it's like burnt to a crisp and like red and gooey. So
well, it's
that's
not another
it.
Shark.
You've
it's the same shark, but yeah, it's sorry. In another spot.
It's another animatronic, but it's the shark that's yeah. been electrocuted and died.
It's
and
quite
that one
gruesome.
Scares me too. Yeah. Like it's pretty gross to look at. And that one scares me as well because he does like one last lunge at the boat.
Yeah.
And you're like looking at it like, ha, we did it. We saved the day. And then he lunges at you and scares you. He goes to attack, and the idea is that he might still be alive. So the skipper shoots it one last time. He destroys the shark. He restores the tranquility of Amity Island, and he does a little cheeky, hey guys, don't tell anyone what happened out here, right? This will be our little secret.
And we'll see you in the movies.
But that's pretty much the quick walkthrough of Jaws the Ride, an incredible attraction. The pacing's great. It's constantly moving. It's 5 minutes, but it literally feels like 1 minute. That's how fast. There's always something going. It's always, you know, something to look at, something to see. Unfortunately, though, it's not around in Orlando anymore. And one of the major reasons, other than Harry Potter, is because it was really expensive. Mm. It was estimated that just the gas to run that explosion scene cost the park $2 million a year.
Wow.
Just for the gas to run that one effect in that one scene of the ride.
That's
not
almost
to mention
10% of what the original attraction cost.
Yep.
A
and
year.
And that's every single year.
Jeez.
And that's not to mention how much you have to, you know, chemicals you had to put in the water and all this sort of stuff to keep it fresh, to keep the water like as clear as it was and those sort of things. But the biggest killer was Harry Potter. So Harry Potter opens at Islands of Adventure, and attendance at Universal Studios Florida Park instantly drops 20% compared to Islands of Adventure. So Islands of Adventure gets all these new guests, but only 80% of those guests are actually going to the other park.
Wow.
When it used to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Like it'd be like going to, you know, 100% of guests going to Disney's California Adventure and only 80% of them going to Disneyland. The fact that a second gate is getting more than your main theme park shows you that something isn't quite right.
Well, for the longest time when, you know, Harry Potter, the world of Harry Potter, or the Wizarding World of Harry
Wizarding
Potter,
world.
That I think they call it. I know a lot of people who just knew it as the Harry Potter Park. And I reckon there would have been a lot of people.
Can we go
who
to Harry were, Potter Land? Yeah.
Yeah, who would have been at either Disney or just in the area around Orlando, or people who have traveled interstate just to do Harry Potter. Because
for sure, yeah.
It is still one of those things to this day. It is such a lucrative property because
yep.
JK.
And it makes sense for them to then go, okay, let's bring it to the other park as well.
Yeah.
And you have to have a park hopper. So in December of 2011, it was announced Jaws would close the following month. So not a ton of time. Essentially, it saw out the busy period at the end of December, start of January.
Mm.
And then it would close in 2012. And rumors immediately began to circulate that it would be occupied by a second Harry Potter Land. And they proved to be true. When the Wizarding World of Harry Potter opened, Diagon Alley expansion opened in 2014. And as I was saying before, this pretty much entire land took up the space of that single ride. Mm-hmm. So the entire land from the waterfront with the King's Cross station to the Diagon Alley expansion itself to Gringotts, all of that is pretty much on the plot that was just Jaws. But thankfully, the ride still lives on in Japan to this day, and it manages to live harmoniously with Harry Potter in one park, which is nice. A nice little end to the story.
With the Japan version, it's kind of odd because they've almost, like, they built Harry Potter in a random part of the car park out the back of the park. And if you look at it...
They did the same with Nintendo.
Yeah, the... Like, the walkway to Harry Potter, to Diagon Alley, not Diagon Alley, sorry, to Hogsmeade, is huge. Like, it goes right around Jaws, and you walk essentially through backstage. It's kind of into the Forbidden Forest,
and yeah, it's a huge walk. And then it's looking like Nintendo is quite similar. It's got, like, the pipe that takes you essentially backstage as well. So it's interesting that they're building all these new expansions, but keeping Jaws. So hopefully it's a sign that it should be around for a little while longer, because Nintendo now isn't opening till next year.
Japan has that luxury of public transport just being so good. Like, there are buses, there are trains, there's everything going into these parks. And I think they're at the point where they can afford to just get rid of their car parks. Because when so many people are coming in, like, the multiple times that I've been to Tokyo Disneyland, Universal Studios, and Tokyo Disney Sea, I have never seen the car parks looking even remotely full, even on busy days.
Well, that's what's happening with Tokyo Disney Sea's expansion is going into the parking lot there. The same reason.
Yeah, they thought that was going to be for Tokyo Disney Sky, which was the rumored third gate. That was an interesting time in the theme park industry.
And it didn't last for long. It was maybe only a couple of weeks that idea was around. But I remember whoever sent it to the other one of us, we were like, whoa. But then when they were like, here's what's going to be in it, that's when I started to be like, maybe not. Yeah. Star Wars, Avatar, these aren't huge properties in Japan.
Yeah. But the fact that rumor existed makes me think that there is some credence to Tokyo Disney Sky coming in the next decade, I'd say.
Who knows? I think they've used up all their land, so maybe if they reclaim some more.
True.
But quickly, if you are interested in Jaws the Ride, two good places to go for more information are the book that I've used for some of the research on this. I've read it cover to cover. It's great to go through. It's called Adventures in Amity, Tales from Jaws the Ride. It's got pictures of the ride, pictures of all the mechanics, as well as plenty of interviews with skippers and stuff like that. And if you're interested as well in some of the skipper stuff, there's one of them did an AMA on Reddit, and it came with some really interesting backstory and history about what it was actually like to work there. And I'll round out with a quick little story from him, from his Reddit AMA, because it was so absurd to me. And we're talking about shark guts kind of landing maybe in somebody's lap. This story is kind of a little extension of that. So here's how it goes. He says, in the spring, there can be, we are inundated with duck families. Ducks and ducklings found their way into every body of water and lagoon on property. Even the Jaws Lagoon.
Oh, no.
I don't know why they would hang out there with every 3 minutes, fire sounds and water mortars going off, but they did. One time a duck swam right over a mortar as it went off, sending the duck flying into the boat, bouncing off the canopy and falling dead and mangled into the lap of a little girl.
What a souvenir.
With the girl thinking the skipper shot the duck with his grenade launcher, the family was compensated greatly by guest relations, and they actually changed the official guidebook for the ride that they were now authorized to perform duck stops or e-stops for duck safety to avoid a similar incident from occurring again. The story was therefore included when training new skippers about e-stop procedures. So kind of gone full circle. You're not going to end up with the duck guts in your lap, but who knows? You might end up with a souvenir Donald Duck.
That is incredible.
But I think that's going to wrap it up. Do you have anything else to say on Jaws the Ride?
No, I think it's one of those things where I guess it's outlived its welcome in the US. And I think essentially in that culture, the Japanese culture seems to have more of an appreciation for nostalgia and older things.
Yeah.
People seem to really be into that idea that you go to Universal Studios to ride attractions like this, no matter how old or how new. And whereas Western culture really seems to have this obsession with
they want the next
new, big, better.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of comes from the instant gratification provided from things like mobile phones. And it's essentially a problem of the ages. But yeah. I think that's why those attractions, like why we no longer see it in the Western world, but why it lives on in Japan.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Sure. Yep. So it's an incredible ride. I'm glad that I've got the chance to experience it in Japan. And it's crazy that Universal Studios Florida is 30 years this year. So the original version of this ride opened 30 years ago. So big happy birthday to Universal Studios Florida, opened up in 1990. Who knows, we might do another one of their opening day attractions before the end of the year as a little happy birthday present to Universal Studios Florida. It's one of my favorite theme parks. It was kind of, you know, working and living at Disney. Universal was always an escape from Disney.
It was a haven.
So it's a shame. Yeah, exactly. It was a shame that Jaws wasn't open there, but I'm grateful it is still open in Japan. And if you get the chance while you still can, don't let the language barrier get in the way. Universal Studios Japan is a great theme park, whatever language you speak. So if you get the chance, go on over and enjoy it.
Mm.
But I think that will do it for us here at Review Time for the Theme Park Cast. If you are interested in checking out, I'll pop that picture up on Twitter of the meat chucking machine.
Yes.
You can find me at Review Time Luke.
I'm at Review Time Tom.
You can find us both on Twitter at Time Review, and you can find us at Review Time everywhere else. If it exists, you'll probably find us there. Thanks for listening to another episode of the show. We will catch you all next week. Review Time's theme park cast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dominic Lacey. We are edited gratefully by Luke Shakatano. A big shout out goes to our Patreons, Jake Cool, Jane McRoberts, Jeremy Koufakis, Louis Najira, Peter Matthews, Ruben Mays, Ray Dredge, John Madison, Michael Pinn, Janine Kerr, CG Lemonade, Tim Descenzo, Josie McDougall, Stephen Shorrock, Matt Sakal, Norman Lacey, Please Use Wisely, and to you, the listener. Review Time's theme podcast will be back next week.